This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, welcome to Ruthie, Uni, Dad and Me. I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Dad, and it's lovely to see you.
It's lovely to see me. I thought you meant it's lovely to see the listeners, and I was going to say...
I think we should do a sound check.
A sound check?
Yes.
How are you going to check the sound?
I'm going to check the sound with a lame joke. Don't you hate it when people answer their own questions? I do.
Not your best work.
No.
A band called 999 Megabytes. Not very good, though. We've not even managed to get one gig.
Good. I like that. That's a good lame
thank
joke.
Thank you, thank you.
I didn't know you'd join in with the lame joke department.
Oh, there you go.
We seem to be recording, so...
So I'm actually quite tired, Dad.
You're always tired. Why particularly this week?
No, not this week. Just today. Because so, I got rudely awakened.
You got rudely awakened? Tell me.
I got rudely awakened. So I was asleep... Happy as Larry in my little bed.
In your little room.
My little tiny room.
I've seen your little room. It's only small, but tidy.
What did you think of the... Yeah, you've got to keep a room like that tidy. Although, actually, right now it's not as tidy. But it's so small. As soon as you drop one thing on the floor, it's just like...
It is a small room. It's one of those rooms where...
It feels like I've not got that much stuff in it, so it doesn't feel that busy. You know, I've only got one little set of drawers and my wardrobe is like in the wall. So it actually doesn't feel... As small as it could, I don't think.
Yeah, it's quite a sort of minimalist lifestyle. It's very sort of Japanese. It's a small room, or as comedians used to say in the UK, it's so small that when you close the doorknob jumps into bed with you. It's that small.
It's not that small.
It's pretty small.
What is even smaller is the kitchen that you've now seen. So you can, all these stories that I've ever told about the kitchen and how... gross it is and how it's ridiculous that we share it between 24 people. But anyway, I was tucked up in
my
bed.
What's the kettle situation, Mother? Because last
time... Oh, Kettlegate. Kettlegate continues. So I rang the college administrator, who then told me to ring this other number, which I have just not rang yet.
Because, oh, right, so it's not their fault, it's your fault.
So I rang the first number, they told me to ring the other number, and then this other number told me to ring another number. So then I thought, well, F it, we'll just use the broken kettle.
So you're using a broken kettle, it leaks.
It leaks.
Yeah, fair enough.
But there's a good game going on where everyone who now tries to pour the kettle says that they can pour it without it spilling, and they say that there's a specific tactic to it. But there's absolutely not. There's no way to pour that kettle without spillage.
Do you find it difficult? This is what I've been wanting to ask you. When you build yourself up to making a call, right, to calling maintenance, I find it, even at my advanced age, that if I've built myself
advanced, you can say that again.
If I've built myself up to, say, ring my accountant up about something, and the accountant says, that's fine, you just have to ring the tax office. And if I ring the tax office and it goes onto voicemail or whatever, or I don't get to speak to them straight away, that's it, basically. Mm. I've made the call that I've built myself up to making. And then it's so difficult to make a second and a third and a fourth. And I think a lot of business is run like that. They know you're not going to take that much trouble. And certainly on the internet, click here. So you click there. Then you have to click somewhere else. And eventually, you just give up.
Yeah.
I'm just worried that I've passed this...
Do you think it's a gene? The thing is, I'll be like, right, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And if it doesn't work out on the first try, then I probably don't need to do it.
I think you've inherited the giving up gene. W.C. Fields...
It's great news, then.
Yeah, W.C. Fields, a comedian you probably never heard of from was in comedy films in the 30s. W.C. Fields used to say, if at first you don't succeed... Give up. There's no point in being a fool about
that. I think if at first I don't succeed, I'll try one more time. But I was in the middle of a story.
Oh, yeah, tell me.
I was saying that I'd been rudely awakened because I was tucked up in my bed, and I hear someone shouting down the corridor, like, so loudly. And there's not very many people on my corridor because a lot of the rooms are empty. So I walk out of my room in my pyjamas, and there's a boy stood there who is so... out of his mind, drunk or high or whatever. And so I say, hello. What do you want? And so he's looking for this boy who's on my corridor. So I direct him to his room and I say, straight down on the left, go back to my room, pick up my phone to say to this boy, like, he's screaming down the corridor, he's going to your room now, though, so just, like, keep him in there. And think, right, hold on, okay. Then I hear him stumbling around again. He's clearly not gone into this other boy's room. So I come out of my room again and I'm like, right. So he says, Bob's not in his room. I don't, you know, what should I do or whatever? So I go back into my room, pick up my phone again to say, like, oh, you're not in your room, so, like, what do you want me to do or something? Come out of my room, and John has walked to the other side of the corridor, past my showers, to the next set of showers. He's got the door open, just pissing in the shower, you know, as you do. Then he comes out of the shower with two, like, takeaway boxes of chips, which he didn't have before getting in the shower. So I didn't understand whether he'd put them in there for safekeeping and perhaps gone back for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Have no idea. And so then the Bob's message to say that he's just outside and if I could just send the boy outside, like, take him to the door and just put him outside. Which I was like, yeah, okay, that's fine. And I say to John, like, oh.
Were the chips, have they got wet?
Not that I know of. No. I don't think so. I think maybe he'd actually had them in the shower, picked them up, I don't know. Didn't watch, unbelievably. Then the boy goes, no, I don't want to go outside. I think I'll just wait in his room. He's left his door unlocked. So he just goes in there. And then Bob's like, oh, can you just wait in the room with him until, like, I can come upstairs or whatever, which is not very long, in fairness. And so then I'm just sat at 3 a.m. with this, like, ketted up boy in someone else's bedroom, just thinking, this is a real low.
Mm. And was he naked all this time?
No one was naked for any of the time.
Okay. Yeah, it's the sort of thing the parents...
I think I would mention if someone was naked in this story.
Well, not necessarily.
No one's naked.
No one's naked in the story at all. And what time is this? Is it the middle of the night?
Yeah, like 3 a.m. I was like half asleep.
Right. Because you're always tired anyway.
I am. Mm. Everyone is, though. When was the last time you weren't tired? 72?
Yeah, around about then.
Yeah.
I've got good news for you.
You do?
Yeah, men are no longer necessary.
Honestly, I've been waiting to hear that my entire life.
Well, as the future comes nearer and we start colonising planets, it's going to be pointless sending men up there because apparently they've done tests on frozen sperm, which can survive the weightlessness of space. This study's involved repeatedly exposing semen to zero gravity and then checking for signs of degradation. Well, it showed there's no need to waste rocket fuel on sending men up to colonise the cosmos because there's no problem. You can get frozen sperm, right? Send it up there with the women, and there will be women-only crews going. That's how we will colonise the planets, which is something...
Brilliant!
Yeah, there you go. Science fiction writers and even NASA itself have long mooted the idea of taking women-only crews on extended space missions, and now they can do it. Helen Sharman, who was... Do you know the name Helen Sharman?
Yeah, I have heard of her name,
She was the first British astronaut, and she's produced a paper arguing that single-sex crews are best for cohesion, and women were preferable to send up there because
I get that.
They were
more
likely to cooperate. So, in fact, the future...
I think it's like that in everything that single... I think there's been studies done when it's about single-sex schools, which shows a similar thing in that men work better when there's women there, but women work better when it's all women.
Mm. Well,
so there you go. Yeah. Same with astronauts.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense, really. I mean, I would be surprised if there wasn't massive, like, romances and affairs and bickering that went on when there's men and women living in such, like, tight proximity like that. I've been doing a lot of thinking this week.
Good, good. I was hoping you had.
Yeah. Because, you know, there was that one week when I told you I hadn't thought it at all.
Yeah, I said, what's on your mind? And you said nothing, which doesn't really work for this podcast, which is supposedly all about life at university.
Mm. But I've been doing a lot of thinking. So I went for... I'm writing some stuff and writing a play and stuff. And one of the things that I had to do was an exercise where I wrote everything that frightened me and everything that made me hopeful about the world and stuff as a kind of thinking of ideas and coming up with things. And free writing is where you write for a set amount of time, usually it's 5 minutes, without letting your pen leave the paper, basically. When you're not allowed to stop, you just have to keep writing and keep writing. And so I started with what I was frightened about, and you come up with the big things that are like climate change and the fear of like the growth of technology, and will there be jobs for you in the future if the machines take over, and all those things. And then I was thinking more and more about it, and I was like, am I truly frightened of that? Because as much as climate change is a massive worry, and I think it is a really big fear for our generation and stuff, I wasn't sure whether it actually really frightened me. Because, I don't know, I think there's a part of everyone that kind of thinks, well, we'll figure that out, you know? Like, humans will... Yeah. We'll just figure it out. I don't know how, I don't know who, but we'll figure it out eventually. But when I was really thinking about what frightened me, it wasn't any of these issues that are of my generation. It was all the classic ones I think humans have always had, which is just, I'm really frightened that I'll be lonely. I'm frightened that I won't be happy. I'm frightened that I'll have to do a job I won't like. Very selfish problems, really. Mm. They weren't the big ones that everyone... You know, I wasn't frightened of oppression in the third world and those kind of things, which I should be, but the things that were frightening were the very, like, personal ones.
I wonder if climate change is one of those things. I just wonder if we've almost become immune to the fear because there's so much about it in the papers. There is a lot of eco-anxiety, loads of it, according to yet more research. The scale of the climate crisis has led to an increase in reports of eco-anxiety, particularly among children and teenagers, health experts have said. Images of smoke billowing over the burning Amazon forest or those Australian bushfires have led to more people reporting anxiety, helplessness, guilt or anger over climate change, according to psychologists and psychiatrists. This has been particularly acute for children and young people, according to mental health practitioners who said they were getting more requests for help from schools. So I'm just wondering if... It's almost stopping us from coming up with solutions, the fact that...
What, being so scared?
Well, it's on such a level, and it's, so, you know...
I think fear a lot of times pushes people there to get stuff done.
Mm. But say, for instance, you're a student studying French and Spanish and linguistics. There's not, you're not studying...
For example, hypothetically speaking,
you're not in a position to come up with a solution. And I'm just...
Maybe a bit of it is, it's kind of gone past the like everyone can just do their bit thing. I think we need like some big radical solutions or whatever. So, and I'm not the person that's going to come up with those.
No. So because we need some big radical solutions, we will carry on driving our cars and going on aeroplanes, etc., etc. It sounds to me when I read about it that we should probably say, well, I'm not going on holiday this year because I'm certainly not flying anywhere this year because of the incredible amount of CO2 that produces.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, let's say, for instance, another hypothetical case. Say, for instance, you're the heir to the throne of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, just another random hypothetical.
Yeah. And then you're using private jets and helicopters to go and talk to people about climate change. Prince Charles flew more than 16,000 miles in less than a fortnight, clocking up a carbon footprint 18 times larger than that of the average UK resident in a year. He did that in a fortnight to travel to the World Economic Forum in Davos to shake hands with Greta Thunberg, you know, who, in fairness to her, doesn't fly. So it seemed that's a massive amount, but we accept it because he is the heir to the throne and one assumes his presence is important.
I don't know how it all weighs up, and I don't know what the solution, like, I don't know whether it is that there needs to be a radical solution or whether we could just solve it by everyone going vegetarian and not flying anymore. But for some people, they say we're past the point of no return anyway, regardless of what we do.
Yeah, so then, it's no point.
But then I also don't know whether that's true or whether it's not true. I don't know how you're meant to know.
No. Well, that's the problem with climate change, isn't it?
Mm.
But it's not a great fear of yours.
It is a fear, but and it is a concern and stuff. But when someone asks me to write what frightens me, it's not what keeps me up at night. It's not what makes me cry. It's not. It's too distant. it's too, I don't know whether it's because I'm incredibly narcissistic, but it's too outside of myself. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
I don't know whether humanity, like it's impossible for us to think about the vastness of space and time. Like, we just cannot wrap our heads around it as humans. I don't know whether it's impossible, it might just be a me thing, impossible for me to wrap my head around climate change.
Yeah,
but what I can is the idea that I'll end up alone. Like, that's a tangible fear that I don't need help understanding.
Well, we're all most concerned about ourselves. I mean, if I looked...
Most concerned about myself, yeah.
I mean, when we do colonise other planets and it's a, you know, a matriarchy, if you like, if it's an interplanetary matriarchy, when that happens and it's all women, there's no men up there, what happens if somebody wants a jar opening?
We were having a lovely discussion, now you've just made it ridiculous.
What happens if there may be spiders up there?
I do spiders. No, I'm not scared of spiders. I've never asked you to do a spider for me.
Yeah, I think you have.
I haven't.
Well, you say that.
Well, I haven't.
Well, certainly if you haven't, the other daughters have, and your mother has.
And probably certainly. David. David's my brother, by the way. But the second part of the task was what makes you hopeful. So I've got something that I saw that I thought, well, that makes me feel hopeful about the world. Other than, I think, my own relationships and whatever. State school in one of the London's poorest boroughs secured 41 offers to study at Oxford and Cambridge universities. The school Brampton Manor in Newham.
Newham, yeah, East London, West Ham country, that.
So, and it rivals the best, like, private schools and stuff. But not only that, I saw that article and it reminded me of my college this year has got 40 places, state school college in the north of England. It's got secured 40 places, well, 40 offers for Oxford and Cambridge this year.
That's good. That is really good.
Isn't that brilliant? Yeah. And people still care. They care about, and I think that shows you a wider thing of, they care about learning stuff for the sake of learning things, which I think is brilliant. Like, you can talk about these degrees that seem silly, like mine, for instance. You know, I've got Google Translate. Most people in the world speak English. So there's really no need. Or English literature or history, the liberal arts degrees, theatre. But people go and they do these courses because they find this, like, human fabric or whatever, just so interesting. And that makes me feel very hopeful.
Yeah.
That people still want to go to Oxford and Cambridge because they're the schools where they think they'll be the best.
Yeah. That's great. That is fantastic. Something else that made me feel sort of hopeful, optimistic, uplifted, etc., was the Windermere Children, which was on BBC. And it was about Holocaust survivors, kids. So the kids, because there were a lot of very young people in the camps when they were liberated by the Russians in 1945. And they set up this charity here in the UK where about there was 1,000 in all, but there was about 300 or 400 went to this place in Windermere in the Lake District and were rehabilitated.
You know what, you said the Windermere Children. I never put those two words together. Like Lake Windermere.
Oh, didn't you know?
I've obviously know what Lake Windermere is, but you said the Windermere Children to me a few times before we started recording, and I'd never thought, oh, they must have been at Lake Windermere.
Well, that's where they were. So they're there in this fairly unlikely setting of the Lake District, absolutely beautiful, and they'd sort of come there directly from the hell that was the concentration camps, and there's one kid who'd been in four different camps, and they rehabilitated these kids, which you'd think they would almost be beyond help because, you know, the hell that they'd lived through, and they all had night terrors and that. You could hear in the evenings when they were sleeping in this sort of camp at Windermere where they were, you could just hear them screaming in the night, loads of the kids and everything. And it was just a fantastic story, and it was brilliantly done. I understood then why people who, like myself, who come from a sort of immigrant background, tend to be so patriotic and think this is such a great country. And I know you sometimes can't understand when we're having the Brexit argument that, you know, I'm with Boris Johnson on that, not on the Brexit argument, but on the fact that this is a great country and we can do great things and we're not...
Because they took you in a way.
The immigrant families that I came from came over at the sort of turn of the 20th century, and it was the Cossacks that drove them out. It's the fact that the UK is generally... reasonably welcoming. Whatever the political discourse is, people here, I think, by and large...
Yeah, I don't know. I think more so 20 years ago, but more so in the world 20 years ago.
It's a totally different world.
Yeah.
It's a totally different world. And the scale of people from Africa, for instance, who would want to come over here, is that much larger than the...
Yeah, but that shouldn't change how tolerant we are as a nation.
No, but politically it changes things. It is a lovely country, by and large, and by and large...
Relatively people, speaking, as well.
Yeah, but, relatively speaking, but...
But you then know, also, like, I think you've got to remember when you're having this... conversation, when you're having this argument, is that you come from a place of incredible privilege in which this country is tolerant, but there are people in this country who that is not their experience.
No, and they are,
and so then when it comes to the argument of Tory austerity or whatever, and you hear people say, yeah, but you know, it will be fine and whatever, for some people it just won't be. And you've got to recognise your privilege when you're saying that it is a brilliant country. It's a brilliant country for you, for some people who get stuck in terrible systems, in terrible situations, who were the survivors of Grenfell. It's a terrible country.
You yourself are saying that this school in Newham, and I know Newham is a very multicultural area. I suspect most of those 40 Oxford and Cambridge people would be from an Asian background. I would guess, so that's just a pure guess,
yeah,
a lot of them would be from a South Asian background. What I'm saying is, why bring the country down all that? And I know it was all
not
part
all
of the
time,
Brexit
not
argument.
All the time. I'm not saying that, and I'm not
right
saying that we should
those
be
3 years of Brexit.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that now. I'm not saying that we should be completely pessimistic. I'm just saying that it is a country which is not great for everyone. And
no, well, nothing can be great for everyone.
No, but it needs to be acknowledged.
But it's not going to be like that. There was, and I suspect even when these Jewish kids were being rehabilitated beautifully by these people who were a lot of volunteers and all that. When that was happening, I suspect some people were still... People will be poor, people will be underprivileged.
Mm.
That is going to happen.
But in a country of great wealth...
Country, which people keep saying.
Racism is institutionalised in Britain, I think, though.
In what way?
We can't get onto this again because we've done it in the past, like, 3 weeks.
No, I know, because people will say
but it is,
all the time,
it is right. It is true that many institutions in Britain are, on some level, whether it be subconscious or not, racist. Black people and multiple black people who have been given a platform have said it. And I'm going to agree with them because I don't have the personal experience of it happening to me because I'm incredibly lucky.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Should we lighten it up with a bit of music?
Yes, let's have a bit of music.
Let's start with yours this week.
Wait, I think we started with mine last week.
Did we?
Mm-hmm.
Well, two weeks in a row.
She sits pretty overthinking her speech, but there ain't nobody else who dare speak. And just don't mess with her parameters. Her old man's in the mafia, a stone cold killer, all this Englishman amateurs. And when it rains, orange juice from England.
That was OJPL by Easy Life, who are an English group formed in 2017, so fairly recent, in Leicester.
Leicester,
which you don't hear many groups coming from Leicester, no? Like, they've 13 million listens for their most famous song, Nightmares, which is a really good song as well. I just think that's an incredible trajectory. In about 2.5 years or whatever, they've gone from being formed to being like massively popular, playing at festivals. They were on at Lost Village in Manchester, I think, last year, and really good song. And then I also kind of chose them because one of my friends said something which I thought was absolutely hilarious and kind of spot on for all my music selections. They just went to me, we were like chatting about music, and they just went, "No, your taste in music it's exactly this, and it's people with noticeable working class accents singing over lo-fi hip-hop beats," which is what that is. So.
Yeah. Well, they don't sound that working class.
It's more regional accents, actually.
Well, Leicester...
I'm a sucker for a regional accent.
I know you are. Leicester doesn't have a particularly distinctive region. It's sort of the East Midlands.
This was kind of like... They don't sound like they're from London, quite. It's not RP, but it's...
No, East Midlands, they say me ducks.
Me ducks.
Me ducks is a very East Midlands thing.
Tough brush.
I'll tell you what about Leicester. Leicester's—they've sort of smartened it up in recent years, but it was never a particularly attractive place. Leicester, a big city, quite diverse. The famous people who came from Leicester were Joe Orton, who was a playwright. Have you ever heard of Joe Orton?
No, I haven't actually.
You should read some of his stuff. You'd really love it. He was a well-known playwright from Leicester.
What, do you know any of the names of his plays?
What the Butler Saw, Loot is another one. Oh, and have you heard of The Elephant Man?
I have, because Bradley Cooper, I think, played him...
On stage,
in a theatre, at some point. But yeah. I think it was a very... like celebrated performance or something.
Yeah, well, John Hurt was a very celebrated performance. He may even have won an Oscar for it. But John Hurt played the Elephant Man in a film sort of early 80s. And the guy's name was Joseph Merrick, and he was born with like hideous deformities. And because at the time he was around, there was still the old freak show thing, they used to display him at scientific lectures and talk about the deformities and things. And he was very difficult to look at because he was born with these, you know, with hunchback and facial deformities and all that. And somebody suggested, because it was so groundbreaking, and it didn't lead to medical advances and things, there should be a statue of Joseph Merrick, the Elephant Man, in the city of his birth, Leicester. And somebody did post somewhere on some social network, "Surely not, Leicester's ugly enough as it is."
Oh, no, that's awful.
It's awful, that's, I know, it's awful, but it's mildly amusing. Shall we hear mine?
Yes, go on.
Here we go. This is the great man, Johnny Cash.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head. That didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert. Then I fumbled in my closet, threw my clothes and found my cleanest dirty shirt.
Sunday Morning Coming Down by Johnny Cash. And I thought, as you're such a fan of Dolly Parton, we'd play a little bit of proper country music.
Hey, Dolly Parton is proper country music.
She is, I know, but a lot of her stuff is sort of crossover pop. That's the great Johnny...
Don't you come into my home and tarnish Dolly Parton's name.
No, I love Dolly Parton.
No, I really did enjoy that very much, sir.
Yeah, and I thought you would associate with that, because he's clearly, Sunday morning, he's woken up with a hangover. There's no part
don't
of
really
head.
Go out on Saturdays very often, actually.
Oh, right. Well, anyway, he's woken up with the... I thought the hangover bit you might. although you don't suffer from hangovers, however.
Not really, no. But that's an age thing.
That might be. So be careful.
I think 2021 is when people start to get hangovers.
Well, that was Johnny Cash, one of the best-selling music artists of all time. He's crossed over into rockabilly, rock and roll, folk, gospel, all sorts of things. Born in Arkansas... The place you used to call Arkansas, I seem to remember.
No, I call it Arkansas when I need to spell it, obviously.
I'm sure you said...
No, I don't. I've never called it Arkansas. I've never called it Arkansas because in the song, a song called Home by Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros, it starts off by saying Alabama, Arkansas.
Okay, fair enough. And was one of your sisters then, or your brother?
Yeah, they're all idiots, the other ones.
Born in Arkansas to poor cotton farmers, Johnny Cash rose to fame in the prominent country music scene in Memphis, Tennessee. Spent 4 years in the United States Air Force. Absolutely fantastic, Johnny Cash. Known as the Man in Black because he used to wear black clothes all the time. And that's why they called him the Man in Black. Brilliant.
So creative.
And also did concerts in prisons. A very famous concert in Folsom Prison. And it's on an album, I think, called Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison. More imagination there.
Wow, gosh, you know...
So he did this thing, Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison. And that's been named as one of the greatest albums of all time, alongside things like Sgt. Pepper and...
Blood on the Tracks.
Blood on the Tracks and that Nirvana album,
Nevermind. The Come As You Are one with the baby, the naked baby. You're right, it's called Nevermind. It says it only says it little at the bottom.
Mm. Well, let's look at the emails now, Ruth.
Oh, we got some then.
A couple, not many. Phil says, Dear both, love the podcast and all of your discussions. I enjoy discussing the content with my recently graduated daughter, as our circumstances and worldly outlooks seem so very similar to both of yours. See, there we were, thought we were being dead original. He says, I struggle to keep up with the modern world, which seems to be changing at a much faster rate in recent years than ever before.
Don't we all? I think the world is changing at such an unbelievable pace. Yeah. Like, compared to 2 years ago, I think it's so different. Mm.
Having just watched this week's University Challenge, I would love to know whether Ruthie would applaud Trinity College Cambridge for including, and he says, I don't know what the modern term is, but we used to call them transvestite. I think it was probably...
I think it's probably someone who's transgender.
It was somebody who was transgender.
I haven't actually watched the programme.
Or would she be criticising both teams for going with the very much standard three men and a woman? Which bit of PC do you go for? I don't think there were three. I think it's mostly two women and two men now. If I'm waiting for your appearance on University Challenge, has they offered you or auditioning for University Challenge?
There was right at the start of term, but we've been knocked out now. Got knocked out by Durham, I think.
Yes, York did get knocked out.
We watched the one where we got knocked out. It's very sad. Sad days. Yeah.
It's a shame that you decided not to go for an audition.
There is absolutely not a cat's chance in hell that I would get on it.
Oh, I wish you would. I really wish you would.
Next time they do that, I mean, I'll go sit in the room for an hour and guess at some questions. But I can only ever answer one or maybe two on a very good week.
Yeah. Well, when you've been sitting at home sometimes watching it with myself and your mum. We usually get about two each.
Yeah.
Except when they're going to a popular culture round, I usually do quite well. It's films.
You have to really hope they come with a 60s films or music round.
Yeah. Phil is in Brentwood, which of course is in Essex, and says, come on, you Irons, which is obviously a reference to West Ham, because Brentwood in Essex, very much West Ham country. Dave Tucker.
I just got a really funny email. I just saw it pop up because we were doing emails. So in my... For syntax, which is the linguistics module that I have to take, we have to do these exercises, and it's often like breaking down sentences and doing these things that are called word trees. This is all incredibly boring, but noun phrases, then have determinant phrases with different articles and whatever. You have to break down the sentences. But she's put, we've got to do these exercises for this week, and she puts, no, there are some typos in this exercise. It's not New York, should be Los Angeles. Not tomatoes, should be apples. Like, what? They're not typos, they're just wrong words. I just thought that was really quite hilarious.
Dave Tucker, to go back to the emails, says, Hi, Martin and Ruth. Still loving the tales of university life, as it's not so long ago that my daughters spoke about the same issues. Mm. So we got two sort of... People with daughters, older white men with daughters, which is...
A niche.
A niche for us, really. However, can I ask where you got and who did the picture for the podcast cover? Truly shocking.
We actually
rather liked it, didn't we?
I like it, yeah.
I think it was somebody in the Times' graphics department who did it.
And I don't know their name, though.
No, we don't know the name, but we thought it was quite good. So
I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too. If you do want to send us an email, because I say we're fairly thin in the postbag this week, as we used to call it many years ago, the address to write to is martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
That's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And we always love to hear from you, because the more that you do, the less that we have to do. Here's something, now that we're empty nesters, because we did decide when we were doing this podcast that when you went off to uni, it would be about you still, but also about myself and your mum, who are now empty nesters, because you're the last of our brood to leave. And as an empty nester, you worry whether you've done all the right things to help you all achieve what you want to achieve, and, you know, just be grown up and, you know, live a decent, happy life. Somebody's addressing this. It's a good idea for a book, actually. And unfortunately, she's now written this book. It's called...
It's annoying, that, isn't it, when someone else writes a good idea?
It is annoying. It's
although the idea is not the hard bit, the writing is the hard bit.
The writing is the hard bit, correct. How to Grow a Grown-Up, the book's called. How to Grow a Grown-Up. Prepare Your Teen for the Real World by Dr. Dominique Thompson and Fabienne Vales. And there are various sections in it, and some of them I think are really, really good. But one section, which we've already not done, is don't go with them to university open days. 10 years ago...
You didn't?
No, I didn't, but I think your mum did.
Mum didn't... I didn't go to any. I went to Durham, that's it. That's the only open. And then York I went to on my own.
I thought your mum went to Durham with you, did she?
She went to Durham with me,
yeah.
But then I went to York on my own. I went to... Manchester on my own.
Well, I'll tell you what she says.
Any of the more like neglect to do stuff ones, you've probably left me to my own business.
Absolutely good. The next one, probably not. But we'll read this. It says, don't go with them to university open days. 10 years ago, no one went with their parents. And now, hardly anyone goes alone. This may seem a charming way for parents to engage in their child's life, but they may overly influence the decision when this is the child's perfect opportunity to research and decide for themselves which university and course they'll feel fully invested in and committed to.
I think you want to do both. I think you want to go to one university open day on your own, one with your parents.
Okay.
But then also, though, like, when Mum went to Durham with me, she was very much backseat. Yeah. I was doing my stuff and she didn't really say anything. And I think if you have the relationship with your parents where I can be like, what did you think of it? And I know that you saying I really liked it is not a veiled...
You better go here.
I think that's the thing. You want to develop that. So then when I could say to Mum, what did you think of it? And she was like, not sure it's absolutely for you. It's not, don't go there.
Well, another chapter in the book says, stop driving them everywhere. Thompson knows plenty of students who have never been on a bus until they get to university. By removing obstacles, parents are removing opportunities to develop independence.
Well, that's ridiculous. I think that means, like, you know, kids who have been driven to college like every day, but like from the age of 11, I got the bus every day to school and then the train later.
That's another mistake we've not made. The same goes for cooking, laundry, making appointments and managing money. They should have these basic life skills before they leave, which means practicing from 15 or 16 at the latest. Her favourite story is of a student who put her jumper in the oven to warm it up before wearing it and ended up burning down her accommodation.
Oh, shit. That's really bad.
Yeah.
But then again, like, Mum has done a lot of that stuff for me, but I've still learnt how to do it. Like,
yes.
I think, you know, I knew how to cook.
Managing money, not so much,
but some stuff I think you do just kind of have to learn on the job.
Yeah. Well, now, Dr. Dominique Thompson, who's written this book...
Making appointments is a good one, though, because I know a lot of people who literally cannot pick up a phone and make an appointment because it's just terrifying. And I do also think it is really scary, but... Mum wouldn't always do it for me, so I can just about make a...
It is, you're right, actually, just phoning people.
Because we don't do it barely at all anymore.
Don't overshare. This, I think, is an interesting one. Probably wouldn't apply to us, but it probably, if you've got a single parent, this might apply to you. It says, don't overshare your own problems, and I can see this sort of happening. This is what she writes in the book. Part of the cultural shift from parenting to parenting... So it's from parenting parenting, or being their best friend, has meant parents often involve their children too much in their own problems, their dating life, work stress, or financial problems. Thompson says it's not fair on them, as they don't have the maturity to deal with it. They then worry about it, and if things go wrong in their own lives, they don't feel they can tell you because you've got your own issues.
Yeah.
I think that's wise advice, isn't it? Because she was a campus GP, so obviously she came across... you'll have a campus GP, will you not? You'll have a doctor on campus.
Yeah, we've got a thing called, like, Unity Health. It's at the other campus, but apparently it's really rubbish. I'm not in it. I live close enough to home that I just would go to my normal doctor.
Yeah?
But yeah.
So you don't, you're now a doctor?
I've not registered at a York
Shouldn't
doctor.
You register in case it's something you can't get back to Wakefield with?
But if it's something I can't get back to Wakefield with, it's probably A&E anyway, and you'd have to register for that.
Mm. Well.
I did think about it, because then at the start of term, you know, they're always telling you to and whatever, but I just didn't think I needed to. Do you think I should?
Yeah, I think you should, really. Well, we can throw this open to the... it could be a sort of...
I'm only ever...
Throw this open to the listeners.
Like 40 minutes away. Well, an hour away from home.
You're only about an hour away. Yeah, I suppose you're right, but...
You know, if it's an urgent thing, I would go to hospital.
Well, clearly, some people have been talking to the GP. I mean, she's been working in Bristol. She says her practice was at the University of Bristol, which has been in the headlines for its suicide rate. She says, I'm afraid Bristol is not in isolation. It's not unusual for universities to have several deaths in a year, unfortunately.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, it is sad. And so she's obviously... All these things that she's saying about parents not growing a grown-up properly... are contributing to a mental health crisis, which is sort of has got Bristol. So
I don't think it's a new thing to say that, like, a lot of the problems that you have later in life are caused by your parents.
Well,
the Larkin poem?
Indeed.
So, well, you know the Philip Larkin poem. So.
We know the Philip Larkin poem. Yeah. Basically, the overwhelming message from this is don't mix in too much. She says, and this is a direct quote from the book: 20 years ago, I could go a year without hearing from a parent. By the time I left, this is from Bristol University. By the time I left in 2017, I couldn't go a week without contact from parents.
Mm.
Well, sort of like helicopter parenting. Yeah. Away, even when you're 19.
Yeah, you don't need
university.
To do it anymore. Really, the overwhelming thing in parenting is mind your own business.
Now, the first question I ask you when we meet on a Wednesday usually is, what are you eating? We've decided you're not vegan because you had a block of cheese. And
not vegan. Not being vegan. Probably not even done a single day of vegan.
No. But still a pescatarian.
Yeah, I mean, I have been forever, though, basically, now, so it doesn't really feel...
No, it's not
like an effort.
No. But you'd be quite happy to date a vegan, I presume.
Yeah.
Just putting it out there.
I'd be happy to date a vegan if they weren't... You know, there's a stereotype around vegans, isn't there?
If they tell you every 5 minutes that they were vegan.
Not even that. That's not the bad thing. It's the
persuade you off.
I wouldn't really go for someone who's like a massive hippie. I wouldn't date all vegans, but I wouldn't definitely not date a vegan. I think that's the general rule on things, isn't it?
I think that probably is the general rule. But there are some vegans who wouldn't date someone like you. apparently, well, I'll read you...
Someone like me, specifically.
I'll read you... Yeah, someone like you specifically. I'll read you this quote from Carl Beaumont, 26, who identifies as vegan sexual because he dates only those with the same diet. He says, dating someone like Ruth Kellner, he says, dating a non-vegan would be like a socialist dating a Tory, he says. Over the past 6 months, there have been dating apps that have grown up for people like him. There's one called Vegly. It's a dating app for vegans. Seen the number of users in Britain nearly quadruple from 3,000 to 12,000. There's somebody else called Karen Ridgers, who runs vegan speed dating nights under her company Veggie Vision, marketed with a picture of a young woman feeding a cherry tomato to a partner.
And I mean, I completely get that. I think it's absolutely fair. You know, you want to dog people, go for dog people and people who are religious.
Dog people? Is this a horror movie? The dog people?
No, you know.
Roger Corman movie?
Anyway, and people who are religious go for other religious people. You know, if your lifestyles and your values match up, then yeah. I don't think it's as mumbo-jumbo-y as it's kind of could be made out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's fair enough.
I think it just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, the vegans date vegans.
Yeah. Yeah. Not in that I think that vegans should have to date vegans or that they're a subclass of people who should only be with each other. It's just, you know, I just think that makes sense. I think there's a whole thing of like opposites attract and you want someone who challenges you. No, you want someone who's similar to you.
I think you do. I think that's how it ends up. You always end up with people similar to you.
I think there's a romantic view in rom-coms and romance films and whatever that you want someone who you argue with, and you have that fire. And that when Harry met Sally, when Harry met Sally. Or,
wow, it's at least four podcasts since we've mentioned When Harry Met Sally,
and loads of other ones, Before Sunrise, 500 Days of Summer. You know, those relationships that are so romantic and whatever. Mm. But in reality, vegans should date vegans. Do you want to hear some funny stuff?
I'd love to hear some funny stuff.
Okay, I'll read you my Your Crush first, because it's always not as good. My Your Crush from this week is a bit rude. Risqué.
Risqué, that's
right. But I thought it's more entertaining.
Any of the better known...
It's got no expletives in it. It's just suggestive, you know?
That's fine. Be as suggestive as you like.
JJ. That's the initials. Should we re-explain what Your Crush is?
Yeah.
It's basically, it's just the University of York, and you post your anonymous crushes or whatever, of who you fancy. JJ, don't tell your girl that you actually got your concussion from hitting your head off my headboard. Come get your jeans back if you dare. A lot of them are just, oh, I thought you were really fit, but that one's quite detailed. So that was funny.
That's clearly somebody who had sex.
And then this is my Your Fess.
These are confessions.
These are confessions of things that have happened to people or whatever. To the guys fighting in Cuda is the name of one of the nightclubs. To the guys fighting in Cuda's smoking area on Tuesday, when you touch foreheads for 10 seconds, staring at each other with pure passion, you gave me so much material for my homoerotic novel. Thanks.
While we're talking about touching foreheads...
Where could this possibly be going?
You've been doing boxing.
Oh, do they do that?
Yeah, occasionally.
Not in my style of boxing. It's very hands-on.
So how was it? Were you good? Were you
I go every Saturday.
Do you still go every Saturday? I thought you didn't. You went first Saturday, then you didn't go the next week.
Yeah, then I didn't go the next week, but I've been going pretty much every week since then. I've gone every week this term, I think.
Right, and you did you did a Tuesday session.
I never do the Tuesday one because apparently it's hard. It's like a lot more cardio and it's harder. It was difficult. The first half an hour, I thought I might die. Because it was like the first half an hour was like cardio and stuff. It was a lot. We did a lot of skipping, burpees, suicides.
Burpees? What are burpees?
You go down to a press up position, then you jump your legs back in on the floor, and then you jump up in the air, then you go back down or whatever. We did these things called suicides, but I'm not sure that everyone calls them suicides. Where you're in a press up, and then you have to lower yourself down onto your forearms and then back up like that. I'm acting it out, which is excellent content. So that was just all cardio. And then the boxing bit is like learning like combinations or whatever, wearing like pads and gloves and stuff, and then just doing them with your partner.
So you got boxing gloves on?
Yeah, but some people, like, so like there's boys who...
You're punching pads, you're not punching...
Sometimes you punch each other's gloves. Sometimes you punch one of you wears pads, one of you wears gloves.
Right.
But... Like, there's some boys and they absolutely go for it and they're clear that they're very good and they train for, like, their fight nights that they're going to. Someone's got down to, for the first time at York, someone's got down, like, quite far in... So I feel like it was called, like, Brocks or Bucks or something, which is, like, quite good, I think, and they've got really far in it and they're representing the uni. But...
You're not going to fight nights, though. You don't do any proper fights.
No, I don't do any fighting. Thursday, they do sparring practice where you have to wear, like, a gum shield and stuff. I don't go to that either. It's just fitness, really. There's a lot of girls there as well. Yeah, you can tell some people do it properly, but we just do the little combinations.
Yeah. Well, it's marvellous having the opportunity to do all that.
Yeah, it's good. You wouldn't really ever have done it.
If you hadn't gone
to
university, you'd never have done it.
No.
So even if you don't come out a competent linguist, there's a good chance you'll be safe in a
Anthony
pub
Joshua.
The time I'm done. Yeah. If you want to get in touch, let me just repeat the address again, martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
That's martinandruthpodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. And if you do want to listen to the songs from this week in full and the songs from all the other weeks, then you can go over to Spotify and just search Ruthie, Uni Dad and Me, or Martin and Ruth Podcast, or Martin and Ruth, or... Whatever, you'll find it in the end.